In part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Songs of Ascension by Meredith Monk and Vocal Ensemble with visual elements by Ann Hamilton on Saturday, April 4th. More information is available online at krannertcenter.com.
In sports, Roger Goodell wants the NFL regular season to expand by a game or two to 17 or 18 games. The commissioner hopes to have a proposal to present to league owners in May. The matter was discussed at length during the NFL meetings that ended today. Goodell said the league has not broached the subject with its broadcast partners or the players' union, and nothing could be done without a new labor agreement. The league now plays a 16-game season. A longer schedule, perhaps by 2011, would mean fewer preseason games. Goodell said the league no longer needs 4 exhibition games. There's a good NBA Eastern Conference matchup tonight as the Orlando Magic play host to Boston. The Celtics are 4 games back of Cleveland in the conference standings, while the Magic are 5 back. 2 teams duking it out for a berth in the NBA playoffs met last night in Chicago. The Bulls took on Detroit and won 99-91 as Kurt Heinrich had 24 points, filling in for the injured Derrick Rose. The Pistons currently hold the 7th spot in the East, while the Bulls are a game back in the 8th and final position. Bradley takes on Pacific in the semifinals of the CollegeInsider.com tournament tonight. The Braves are 2-0 in the all-time series against Pacific, but it's been quite a while since the teams have faced off. Bradley beat the Tigers 71-49 in December of 1955 in Peoria and 80-68 in the Great Alaska Shootout in 1979. Among yesterday's games in the second round of the women's NCAA tournament involving Big Ten teams, Iowa State defeated Ball State 71-57. Michigan State was victorious over Duke. The score there, Michigan State 63, Duke 49. Minnesota, meanwhile, fell to Texas A&M. The score, 73-42. The Chicago Blackhawks get a visit from the San Jose Sharks tonight. San Jose dropped its last meeting with Chicago 4-2 in California on January 31st, snapping a 13-game winning streak in the series. That run includes 6 straight victories at the United Center, including a 6-5 win in November in the Sharks' lone visit this season. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible by Ratio Architects, designer of the U of I Hotel and Conference Center development located in the UIUC South Research Campus, on the web at ratioarchitects.com.
The federal stimulus money is intended to pour nearly $790 billion into the economy. As local governments apply for that money, they're finding themselves in closer contact with the federal government, learning how to deal with the complicated process of applying for federal funds. NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports.
Elizabeth Trice says right now, stimulus money is her number one priority. She's the grants coordinator for Cumberland County, Maine.
My boss has said, essentially, go out there and see if there's anything we can apply for.
So Trice is spending a lot of time on grants.gov, the federal government site where guidelines for dozens of different stimulus grants are posted. She says it's pretty challenging to use.
It'd be nice if there was something that said these are the competitive grants that are available through the stimulus. And, you know, or maybe to have a searchable site that says, what entity are you? Are you a nonprofit? Are you a unit of government? And then you could say, please show me all of the grants that I'm eligible to actually apply for.
In Charlotte, North Carolina, Margaret Stark is a grants consultant who specializes in law enforcement. These days, she's helping police departments in small towns and rural areas apply for stimulus funds.
I know that departments across the United States are laying off officers. I talked with one about a month ago that said they just laid off 40 more officers.
For police officers applying for a federal grant for the first time, Margaret Stark tries to walk them through the sometimes daunting process. She tells them to follow the guidelines to the letter, be clear about what they need in the limited space available, and to make it easy for reviewers to follow.
You don't want them to have to flip back pages to say, where were these guys from? What was their population? So you want them to read start to finish.
Is the brevity part a challenge?
Not usually, especially not for law enforcement officers. They're used to writing incident reports. They're used to Just the facts, ma'am.
The facts of the stimulus can be mind-boggling, says Valerie Brown. Last week, she and hundreds of other county and city officials from around the country tried to sort it out at the White House Recovery and Reinvestment Act Implementation Conference in Washington. Brown, a supervisor for Sonoma County, California, says it went from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. with less than an hour for lunch.
During this massive meeting and exposure to all this information, you see throughout the audience people with their BlackBerries texting people back at home. Now, did you send in a grant for this? Did you know that this money was available here? Here's a pocket over here you might want to try.
Valerie Brown is also the president-elect of the National Association of Counties. She says this was the first time in her memory so many local officials were invited to a conference sponsored by the White House.
I've been in government for about 15 years. I don't remember a time that it's been this exciting, that there's actually been this wonderful partnership between the federal government and local government, and that we are working on the same page with them, and that they are drawing us in.
That partnership, says Brown, needs to work, since there is still an overwhelming amount of stimulus information for both local and federal officials to sort out. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News, Washington.
Over the past half century, American families have been getting smaller. With the advent of birth control and as women moved into the workplace, many couples have had fewer children. Now there's a small but growing fundamentalist Christian movement that runs counter to that. It gets its name Quiverful from a biblical verse that says children are like arrows, and blessed is the man who has many in his quiver. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty spent a day with two families of modest means with many mouths to feed.
How many? There's a whole dozen, I think.
A typical pre-dawn breakfast in the Swanson household in Shelby, Michigan. 10-year-old Lydia Swanson cracks a dozen eggs laid by the family chickens. Her mother, Kelly, fries 3 pounds of sausage from their own pig and toasts a 12-inch loaf of homemade bread. If they didn't raise their own food, Kelly says they'd spend $1,000 a month on groceries for her gaggle of growing children.
Josiah's 15 and Elisha is 12. 13. You're 13. I'm sorry. At least I remembered your name.
She can perhaps be forgiven the lapse. The 40-year-old mom has 7 children, the youngest 6 months, and she'd like to have more. The Swansons subscribe to the Quiverful movement. It's based on Psalm 127, which says, like arrows in the hands of a warrior are sons born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them.
When we first got married, we actually didn't want children.
But then Jeff Swanson says they began to notice that the Bible was very high on big families. And Kelly says they decided that God knew how many children they could handle.
We just started thinking, God is sovereign over life and death. God opens and closes the womb. That's what his word says. So why we're fiddling around with the whole system and trying to control it ourselves, we need to stop doing that.
18 years and 7 children later, the Swansons live on his dairy farm salary of less than $50,000 a year. And they've gotten used to the comments from outsiders.
Do you know what causes this? That's always my favorite one when I'm pregnant. And my husband has a lovely response to that.
Of course we know what causes it. We practice all the time.
So do their friends. The average family at their evangelical church has 8.5 children, children that the Swansons hope will spread the message of Christ.
The womb is such a powerful weapon. It's a weapon against the enemy.
Nancy Campbell is a leader of the Quiverful movement. The author of Be Fruitful and Multiply has 35 grandchildren. She and her husband stopped at 6 kids, and it is her great regret.
What a waste! Wow! To have more of these children. My greatest impact is through my children. The more children I have, the more ability I have to impact the world for God.
A Christian God, that is. And she says if believers don't start reproducing in large numbers, biblical Christianity will lose its voice.
we look across the Islamic world and we see that they are outnumbering us, and they are in many countries taking over those nations without a jihad, just by multiplication.
Still, Quiverful is a small group, probably 10,000 fast-growing families, mainly in the Midwest and South. But they have large ambitions, says Catherine Joyce, who's written about the movement.
They speak about, if everybody starts having, you know, 8 children or 12 children, imagine in 3 generations what we'll be able to do. We'll be able to take over both halls of Congress. We will be able to reclaim sinful cities like San Francisco.
In a suburb of Grand Rapids, Michigan, Misty and Seth Huckstead, both 31, are making last-minute preparations for a birthday party. No small task, with 6 kids and 1 on the way. With such a large family, they get by with 1 car, they shop at thrift stores, and occasionally rely on the local seminary's food bank.
Is it difficult? Yes, but do we have regrets? No.
Seth Huckstead says they didn't always have this attitude. When they were 23, already with 4 children, he had a vasectomy. But they searched the Bible and concluded that sterilization was an affront to God.
And he presents children as a blessing. And so we started to evaluate whether or not our decision was ethically right. And we came to regret our decision.
They turned to a ministry that raises money and finds doctors to reverse vasectomies at a bargain price. Their family grew. Misty Huckstead says she'll have as many children as possible. She loves having babies and believes it's the proper role for women.
It's not individual. It's not, I'm a woman, you know, hear me roar, I'm going to go take on the world. Family has always been the foundation of church and society. It's God's design. It's beautiful.
Moments later, another Quiverful family drops by, and for a few moments, they entertain themselves as would a large family 100 years ago.
Oh, happy is the man that hath his quiver filled with bows.
Singing Psalm 127, a song that seems to be written just for them. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
Coming up this afternoon on The World from PRI, a doctor from Darfur has seen the humanitarian crisis with his own eyes. As conditions in Darfur grow worse, he pleads for international help. A Sudanese doctor speaks out. That story in the day's news coming up on The World at 3 o'clock here on AM 580. Bicycles are becoming more popular with adults thanks in part to the downturn in the economy. A growing number of bike cooperatives are giving hands-on lessons about how to make old bikes road-ready with some used but still usable parts. Dana Goldman reports.
Matari Yemuja isn't a typical bicyclist yet. He's young African-American and lives in the suburbs. But on a recent weeknight, he was in the city hauling around his unrideable hand-me-down bike.
Ever since I got it, it's been looking that weird, you know. The metal part of the wheel is, like, really bent, you know, so it's got a lot of issues right now. So I definitely need new tires, you know.
In fact, Matari's bike wheels kind of look like they've been run over more than once. Matari didn't know how to fix them and didn't have money to spend at a bike shop. But on this clear spring night, none of that mattered.
We are working on, what's your name?
Matari's bike.
Matari's bike. And I'm Big John.
Big John Braswell is a regular at the Sopo Bike Cooperative in Atlanta, Georgia. Sopo is one of more than 100 bike co-ops that have opened around the country over the last few years. They're do-it-yourself community centers with tools and used, donated, and salvaged parts. People like Matari can learn to take old wheels or handlebars or seats and put them on other bikes. They end up with a functional bicycle that's cheaper and more unique than what they'd find in a store.
The Frankenbike is an industry term to refer to a bicycle that's put together out of parts.
Rachel Spiewak is the founder of Sopo.
Usually parts salvaged from bikes that aren't functional anymore, so sort of a term of endearment for something. One bike put together out of many.
Spiewak likes her Frankenbikes and the bike co-op model because they help people who want to start biking but don't know where to start, like Matari Yemuja. And volunteers like Big John are more than happy to teach what they know.
Dude, we have to go in and find you a rim because that is bent.
Yeah, that was my biggest fear.
When SOPO opened 3.5 years ago, Rachel Spiewak couldn't have known gas prices would get so crazy or that the economy would tank. But in car-centric, sprawling Atlanta, she and a few friends wanted to show that bikes could be a cheap, environmental, and practical option.
We're a community of people that already kind of had our eye on what the gas prices were doing and, you know, the actual cost of being car-dependent. And so to us, the crisis was already here, and we wanted to do something proactive about it.
When gas prices shot up last year to more than $4 a gallon, Spiewak watched as the number of visitors to the donations-only shop grew and grew. Just about everyone was looking for an option besides driving. Now, with more people out of work and pinching pennies, SOPO's seen even more people coming in with their bikes looking for help. During January and February, 275 people came to SOPO, even though the shops only open a few hours a day. But the bike co-op's popularity doesn't really surprise anyone, including Spiewak.
So we figure, you know, how many people have a bike? Most people. Who's ridden it recently? Not a lot. And why is that? Flat tire, you know, the brakes are kind of out. Kind of minor repair issues. So there's just an infinite supply of discarded bike parts. And there's an infinite need for transportation, and there's a lack of money. So that's where we come in.
And there's so much demand and interest, it's not just SOPO seeing so many folks coming in. New bike co-ops are still opening around the country. And these days, all the co-ops are happy to watch people who came in carrying their bikes leave riding them. After all, those same people often come back and help someone else looking for a new start on an old bike. For the Environment Report, I'm Dana Goldman.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
Earth and sky.
One of the most important roles of the ocean in how the earth works is really the role of the oceans in climate.
You're listening to oceanographer Paul Baker. He talked to us about how oceans help regulate global temperature.
The ocean and the atmosphere work together to carry that heat from the tropics to higher latitude.
In other words, they draw warm currents from the equator.
And that makes it possible for us to live all over the surface of the Earth and not perhaps just in certain very small parts of the Earth.
The ocean also helps move colder water to lower latitudes. So there's a continuous exchange of water between latitudes. Baker said this circulation might be vital to maintaining moderate climate systems on Earth.
The slowdown of it could mean that less heat was brought to high latitude and that Europe could get cold. So it's kind of ironic that global warming in this scenario, global warming could bring the cooling of northern Europe.
He also added that ocean circulation could be disrupted by global warming. This potential cooling effect for Europe is still under debate. Today we're celebrating the International Year of Planet Earth, thanks to the National Science Foundation and the U.S. Geological Survey. More at yearofplanetearth.org. I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia.